earlier and just tell you a little story. Seeing we're at near Indianapolis, and we have some brethren from Chicago here. The story goes that this one fellow goes up to the ticket agent at the airport, and he says, "When's your next?" It's this Indianapolis airport. And he says, "When's your next flight to Chicago?" He says, "Oh," he says, "there's one leaving at." And by the way, Indianapolis was on Eastern Standard Time, and Chicago was on Central Time. So the ticket agent says, "Well, the flight's leaving at 1 o'clock, and it arrives in Chicago at 1:01. So the fellow says, "Would you please repeat that?" He says, "Well, the flight leaves at 1 o'clock, and it arrives at 1:01. He says, "Would you like me to make a reservation for you?" So the fellow says, "Well," he says, "no." He said, "but I think I'm going to hang around and watch that thing take off." So, you know, some of our differences are because of misunderstandings of the way things are said, but not all of them. Okay, we're not going to have a hymn and opening prayer. This film is entitled Relentless. It's not a Bible student film. It was produced by Biblical Zionists in Israel. It is a very objective of the portrayal of the current situation in Israel. And they bend over backwards because they represent a very definite position. And that position is that Israel should keep all of the land. But they are very objective, but nonetheless you get material in here that you do not get in the news media. And this is the reason for this handout, is that it gives the scriptural rights to the land, which you all know, but it also, there's a section in that deals with the legal rights to the land, and also the historic rights to the land for the Jews. But the legal rights are interesting. I'm just going to quote what we have on the front cover that not many know about. They think that because of what the United Nations actions, that Israel could just be wiped out as far as their legal rights are concerned. Article 80 of the UN Charter permits Israel to ignore both UN resolutions 424 and 338. Jewish land rights granted by the League of Nations British Mandate cannot be annulled by the United Nations. See page 40, top. Israel is only required to recognize the civil and religious rights of the Arabs in the land. See page 4, paragraph 2. Okay, we will have the lights out now and the showing of the film Relentless. And at its end, I'll just make a couple comments to close.
Today, there is deep pain in the Middle East, on both sides. The world watches as Palestinians suffer the humiliation and frustration of curfews and checkpoints, a constant military presence in their cities.
But by their actions and their nervous behavior, here, for example, arresting a street trader, they merely further inflame the Palestinian hate.
Israel says it's forced to impose these measures to prevent further acts of Palestinian terror. And so the Palestinians escalate their attacks to avenge Israeli brutality and bring an end to what they consider to be the Israeli occupation. How did we get here? After World War II, the United Nations declared that the time had come for the Jews to officially return to the land of Israel and rebuild their ancient homeland. The United Nations decision was rejected by the Arab world. The very day the state was declared, Israel was attacked by five Arab countries. The source of the conflict is clear.
the Arab nations see the Israelis as thieves, usurpers. But with the creation of the State of Israel, the Jews were stealing Arab lands. The Jews, however, have always considered Israel as their ancestral homeland, citing a divine promise and an uninterrupted Jewish presence in the land of Israel for over 3,500 years. Two peoples, one land, a festering conflict. The question is, what steps has each side taken towards resolving the conflict, towards peace? At the very inception of the state in 1947, the United Nations proposed a resolution, a compromise, to partition the land into separate Arab and Jewish states. Two states for two peoples.
Palestine, where news of the United Nations' decision to recommend partition brings wild jubilation among the Jewish communities in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. A vivid contrast to the bitterness felt by the Arab peoples as the troubles of the Holy Land enter a new phase, perhaps the gravest yet.
Israel accepted the plan. The Arabs rejected it and immediately instigated bloody battles to destroy the Jewish state. The Arab attacks did not succeed. Due to their rejection of the two states for two people compromise, the Arabs living in the West Bank and Gaza found themselves without any state at all, forced to live under Jordanian and Egyptian rule from 1948. Then, in 1967, the Arabs mobilized again for war. In 6 days, Israel emerged victorious and won the battles over the West Bank, Gaza, and Jerusalem. The Palestinians now found themselves under Israeli rule. Between the wars, the Israelis were hit with a steady stream of terror attacks.
Once again, terror comes to Jerusalem with the blowing up of an entire shopping center in Ben Yehuda Street, burying scores of victims under tons of rubble. Here, in the heart of the city, a devastating blast for which Arab quarters later claimed responsibility.
And the terror continues to this day. Terror, the Israelis clamped down on the Palestinians. And in retaliation, the Palestinians lash out with more acts of terror. And so the Israelis clamped down again. The world media has dubbed this the endless cycle of violence. In 1993, a plan was devised to end the bloodshed and bring peace to both peoples. It was a dream that began in Oslo. Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, U.S. President Bill Clinton, and PLO Chairman Yasser Arafat later came together to sign a revolutionary agreement. Until Oslo, it was illegal for an Israeli to negotiate with the PLO, a self-proclaimed terror organization responsible for the murder of Jews and Israelis worldwide.
The PLO chairman, Yasser Arafat, denounced for decades as a terrorist, was welcomed at the White House.
Oslo would lay the vital groundwork for each side to achieve what they wanted most, namely, a land the Palestinians could finally call their own, and an end to the terror attacks so that the Israelis could live in peace and security.
Finally, the time is approaching when there will be safety in Israel's house, when the Palestinian people will write their own destiny.
This was the Land for Peace deal, the first real step towards fulfilling the Palestinian demands for an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, lands won by Israel in the Six-Day War. The Palestinians wanted Jerusalem as the capital of their new state.
The Palestinians wanted the removal of all existing Jewish homes and settlements that had developed in the West Bank and Gaza region. The Palestinians wanted to see the return to Israel proper of the descendants of the 600,000 refugees that had fled the country in the 48 and 67 wars. The Palestinians claimed that there were up to 4 million family members now eligible to make their home within the borders of Israel. Even though every one of these demands represented a potential threat to Israel's security and survival,
the time for peace has come.
Israel was willing to trade land for peace. Before all the Palestinians' demands could be considered, there needed to be a true sense of trust between the two peoples, and the Oslo Accords were designed to achieve just that.
My people are hoping that this agreement, which we are signing today, will usher in an age of peace, coexistence, and equal rights.
Mr. President, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Enough of blood and tears. Enough!
The time for war was over. This is the time for peace.
It is a revolution.
The Oslo deal was unique. Rather than negotiating the major issues, they chose instead to sidestep them, in order to first create an atmosphere of mutual trust and understanding. Oslo was therefore not a final peace deal, but the start of a peace process, and it called for a five-year period in which both sides would take concrete steps that would improve relations and increase goodwill between the two peoples. At the end of this five-year period, they would return to the negotiating table to deal with the Palestinian demands. Only this time, not as enemies, but as partners with a common goal. Here is what Israel committed to at Oslo. Israel agreed to recognize the PLO, who would no longer operate as a terror organization, but rather as a legal governing body, now to be named the PA, the Palestinian Authority. Israel agreed to transfer land over the PA control, the exact amount to be determined in a series of interim deals. Israel committed to educate its public towards peace and to prepare the Israeli population for the difficult compromises that would need to be made in order to allow for the establishment of a Palestinian entity right next door. Israel agreed to allow the creation of a PA police force of up to 10,000 members on the provision that there be no terrorists on staff. And finally, Israel agreed to supply the PA with arms and weapons in order to help them police their own people and destroy terror. And these were the Palestinian commitments at Oslo.
The Palestinians agreed to end all terrorist activities.
They agreed to recognize Israel's right to exist, which means they would have to amend the PLO National Charter, which calls for the destruction of all of Israel through violence. The PA committed to destroy all terror groups and confiscate illegal weapons. The Palestinians committed to preserve and protect all Jewish holy sites that fall under PA control in the transfers of land. The PA agreed that all future problems with Israel would be solved by negotiation only, and never again to revert to terror. And finally, the PA undertook to educate their people for peace. This included an end to public incitement towards violence and hatred. The world was so optimistic about Oslo that the leaders shared the Nobel Peace Prize in 1994.
I believe it is fitting that the prize has been awarded to Yasser Arafat.
Oslo was dubbed the Peace of the Brave. Both sides were taking major controversial steps.
For the first time, the Palestinians were giving up their longtime dream of destroying all of Israel in favor of a two states for two peoples option. And Israel faced the risk of creating a terror state right in its backyard if the PA didn't live up to its commitment to end terror. By way of illustration, if the Palestinians controlled the entire West Bank region, Israel would be left with a thin waist of only 9 miles at its narrowest. This is what the United States Joint Chief of Staff termed indefensible borders in a 1974 report. It's also important to consider the diminutive size of Israel in relation to its Arab neighbors, many of which have not accepted Israel's right to exist and are still officially in a state of war with her. Here, on a map of the Middle East, Israel is practically indistinguishable. And in relation to other regions, Israel is minute. Yet it was still willing to give up its land for peace. So, how did each side live up to its end of the land for peace agreement? In accordance with its commitment to transfer land, over the 5-year period, Israel relinquished to the PA 42% of the West Bank and over 90% of the Gaza Strip. This meant that 98% of the Palestinian population was no longer under Israeli control and were now subject to the jurisdiction of Yasser Arafat and the PA.
By the way, the only country in the world in modern history that was willing to give part of its ancestral homeland after it won all the battles and all the campaigns against an aggressor enemy, give back or give away part of its ancestral homeland for in the hope that this will bring about peace. The only one.
And so, Israel complied with its agreement to transfer lands to the Palestinians, as well as to recognize the PA. In accordance with its commitment to educate for peace, Israel embarked on a major campaign to win its population over to the ideals of Oslo.
There was a total change in Israeli policy. In fact, Israel suddenly began saying, we are for the PLO, that we want international recognition of the PLO, that we believe that if the PLO is strengthened, this is going to bring us security. Terrorism against Israeli citizens is acceptable because the people who are being murdered by Palestinian terrorists are not victims of a terrorist war, but rather victims of peace. Most Israelis were willing to try it.
Peace was indoctrinated in all schools at all levels. A non-governmental organization, the Center for Monitoring the Impact of Peace, conducted a survey of 360 Israeli textbooks in order to determine how they related to peace and tolerance.
Israel made this commitment in Oslo to educate for peace. The truth is, Israeli school books, even before Oslo, were positive and were separating between the conflict and the Arabs themselves. Since Oslo, Israel has been very, very actively talking about Oslo, referring to Oslo, teaching about Oslo as opening a new dawn of peace.
Israel was so determined to educate for peace that severe steps were taken against those refusing to cooperate.
Being against Oslo, you were suddenly called anti-peace. If you were supportive of things that Oslo claimed to be against, like Jewish sovereignty over a united Jerusalem, or continued expansion of Jewish towns and cities in Judea and Samaria and Gaza, then you were tantamount to a member of Hamas.
Despite the intense education campaign, not all Israelis were convinced. However, all Israelis were shocked when one of their own turned to terror. In 1995, a Jewish fundamentalist assassinated Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, claiming he was frustrated by the peace process, that the transfer of lands weren't bringing peace, only more dead Jews. However, the overall success of the Israeli education campaign is reflected in public opinion polls. Prior to Oslo,
Only 28% of Israelis supported the creation of a Palestinian state. Most were afraid of the security threat, whereas in the years following Oslo, the figures jumped to over 51%. And so Israel fulfilled its Oslo commitment to educate for peace. Israel also supplied the PA security forces with thousands of arms and munitions.
The new Palestinian security forces moved in to take the place of the Israelis, but the order didn't last long. Seemingly everyone with access to a weapon fired jubilant volleys into the air.
Israel was in compliance with its Oslo commitment to supply arms. Israel was not perfect in its adherence to the Oslo Accords. Critics state that even though Israel said it wanted peace, its actions belied that point. At the very time Israel signed the Accords, it was building and expanding Jewish settlements in the West Bank, on lands that were ostensibly to become a part of the new Palestinian homeland. Palestinians viewed this expansion as undermining the creation of a viable Palestinian state and was against the goodwill of the peace process. Israel countered by saying that the settlements were never a part of any peace agreement and therefore not a violation of the peace accords. Others criticize Israel because it delayed in its transfer of lands over to PA control. Israel countered by saying that this was because of the rampant terror at the time. In other words, the lack of PA compliance. In the end, however, the public record testifies that all agreed land transfers did in fact take place, along with Israel's fulfillment of every other major Oslo commitment. And how did the Palestinians do? The PA's key commitment at Oslo was to bring an end to terror. After the signing of the accords, the killings were expected to stop, or at the very least, to drastically subside.
We gave 42% of the land. Did we get 40% of peace? Did we get even 20% of peace? Talking about the formula, land for peace. We didn't get anything in return.
More Israelis were killed in the 5 years following Oslo than in the previous 15 years combined. 279 men, women, and children were murdered in 92 lethal terror attacks, deliberate acts of violence carried out against Israeli civilians by Palestinians.
We wanted to believe in peace, only to be shocked back to reality, only to get that wake-up call, you know, from Yasser Arafat, when the first suicide, homicide bombings and killings started. After Oslo.
Scenes like these were becoming frighteningly commonplace.
הבקבוק נכנס לתוך הרכב, האישית פשטה ועברה אחורנית, שלב הייתה ישבה מאחורנית בכיסא תינוק. והיא הייתה מוקד האש. זהו, שלב נפגעה מאוד מאוד קשה. הבעיה הייתה שהייתה תלועה בתוך הכיסא, היה לי מאוד קשה לחלץ אותה. האצבעות יד שמאל נשרפו ונפלו.
Kobe was in eighth grade, and he was an adventurous boy. Apparently they went hiking. They didn't tell us, of course. And they were met by terrorists who stoned them to death, beat them to death, and left them there.
PA was in violation of its primary Oslo commitment to end terror. When Israeli civilians are murdered, the PA comes out to condemn the attacks.
President Arafat said, I want to be very clear, we are against any and every operation targeting civilians, whether they are Israelis or Palestinians.
The PA's second Oslo commitment was to wipe out all terror organizations. When terror groups like Hamas, Islamic Jihad, or the PFLP claim responsibility for their deadly attacks, the PA claims innocence. After all, these groups are apparently violently opposed to the peace process, as well as to the Palestinian Authority itself.
We are against PLO because Mr. Arafat put his hand on Rabin's hand.
But if the PA was taking steps to stamp out terror groups like Hamas, Israelis asked themselves why Yasser Arafat was seen on Palestinian television publicly praising Hamas terrorists. Yahya Ayash, also known as the Engineer, was the mastermind behind the first suicide bombings, a series of attacks that claimed more than 50 lives. Israelis also wondered why Yasser Arafat honored Sheikh Ahmed Yassin. Yassin is the spiritual leader of the Hamas terrorist organization. In 2002, a clearer picture emerged. Records seized by the IDF in raids on Yasser Arafat's headquarters clearly linked the PA leader with terror groups. The records reveal that for years, the PA has been supplying terror groups with funds, resources, and arms to carry out their attacks. The U.S. agreed that the PA was behind the shipment of over 50 tons of illegal, sophisticated weaponry found on the Karine A ship, seized in 2002. The PA neither banned the terror organizations, declaring them illegal, nor did they confiscate their weapons. Instead of stamping out terror groups, the PA colludes with them in acts of terror. An organization's charter defines its philosophy and goals, which is why it was encouraging when the PA agreed to amend the PLO charter that calls for the destruction of Israel through violence.
Israel wants the PLO's charter annulled because this says armed struggle is the only way of liberating Palestine, and continues, it is Arabs' duty to liquidate the Zionist presence.
In 1998, 5 years after Oslo, the charter still had not been amended. Only after intense international pressure, culminating in a visit by President Clinton to Gaza, did the PA take its first small step
to make it clear and unequivocal that they are choosing the path of peace and partnership with Israel.
Under Clinton's influencing presence, the PA's governing body, the PNC, agreed to suggest changes to the charter. But to this day, not one change has been made.
Today, Palestinian websites still list the unchanged charter as current, including such articles as Article 21, the Arab-Palestinian people, expressing themselves by the armed Palestinian revolution, reject all solutions which are substitutes for the total liberation of Palestine. Article 19, the partition of Palestine in 1947 and the establishment of the State of Israel are entirely illegal. In other words, Israel's right to exist is not recognized. The PA is in violation of its Oslo commitment to amend the PLO covenant. At Oslo, the Palestinians also committed themselves to protect the Jewish holy sites that fell under their jurisdiction in the transfer of land. Not only did the Palestinians not permit Jewish worshippers to safely visit numerous holy sites, but the PA police often turned a blind eye to angry Palestinian mobs who constantly throw stones and fire bullets at Jews who come to pray at Rachel's tomb in Bethlehem. The ancient Peace for Israel synagogue in Jericho was destroyed by Palestinian mobs, as was Joseph's tomb in Nablus.
The flag goes up and Palestinians celebrate their new presence in a shrine which Israel had continued to control as an isolated enclave in the Palestinian town of Nablus. They've left forever. They will never come back, says Mahmoud Al-Alul, the Palestinian governor of Nablus. God willing, he adds, they will evacuate all their outposts and all our homeland. Later, the initial delight became unbridled Palestinian joy. The crowd, which effectively took over control from their policemen, set on fire Israeli artifacts left behind. Many people set about tearing the shrine down with pickaxes and iron bars.
As Torah scrolls, Bibles, and other ancient holy items burn at the hands of the Palestinians, the PA is in violation of yet another Oslo agreement to protect Jewish holy sites. At Oslo, the Palestinians also committed to educate their people towards peace and tolerance.
Do you think that you are going to live to see a peaceful Palestinian state next to Israel?
This is what I am, man. Hoping to live together beside the Israelis.
That is what Yasser Arafat tells the world media. But Palestinians have been hearing a very different message. These are typical Friday sermons broadcast on official Palestinian television.
قاتلوهم أينما كنتم حيثما ثقفتموهم فاقتلوهم
هنيئا لمن وضع حزاما ناسفا على نفسه أو على أبنائه ودخل في أعماق اليهود وقال الله أكبر ولله الحمد لا إله إلا الله محمد رسول الله.
Palestinian religious leaders appear every Friday on Palestinian television giving sermons from various mosques, and their message is uniform.
فاليهود هم اليهود هؤلاء هم الذين يجب أن يذبحوا ويجب أن يقتلوا
وتحول شبابنا إلى قنابل وصاروا يتفجرون فيهم صباح مساء.
They are teaching their people that they have the obligation, now the religious obligation, from Allah to murder Jews.
To live together beside the Israelis.
Yes, in peaceful agreement.
Yasser Arafat had, in a speech made last week in South Africa, apparently spoken of a jihad or holy war to liberate Jerusalem. By this morning, the issue threatened to derail a meeting he was due to have with the Israeli foreign minister, Shimon Peres. But then the PLO chairman explained he'd been using jihad as a metaphor.
I can say that I will continue my jihad to achieve real peace. This is the fact. Some extremists had changed the religious terminology to a political terminology. It is not my fault.
After Oslo, the PA controlled or influenced all Palestinian TV, radio, and newspapers. Theirs were not messages of peace.
I condemn completely these terrorist activities.
The question was, is the same message that's being presented to the world being presented to their own people?
There is hardly a Palestinian who is spared the messages of the PA's media policy. Countless newspaper articles, radio and television programs sing the praises of suicide bombers and honor their families. Blatant commands to hate and murder Jews are found everywhere. Pictures of suicide bombers and terrorists decorate Palestinian homes, streets, and schools. Suicide bombers have become the role model for Palestinian children, the ultimate hero that every child aspires to be. Hopes of peace and reconciliation rest with the younger generation. In PA-controlled schools, however, these hopes are systematically crushed. The same institution that monitored Israeli textbooks also conducted a comprehensive survey of all 60 Palestinian textbooks introduced into the school system after the Oslo Accords. In none of the Palestinian textbooks is peace with Israel mentioned. In none of the textbooks is the Oslo peace process cited. In none of the textbooks do they mention the connection that Jews have had to the land for the past 3,500 years. In none of the Palestinian textbooks and maps does Israel even exist. On the other hand, the Fedayi, or guerrilla, and the Shahid, or suicide martyr, are praised as spearheads of the Palestinian struggle.
Here you have an example from a 7th grade school book. This picture of a dead child here being carried aloft as a heroic shaheed follows a poem called The Shaheed, which literally glorifies children or individuals who go out and die. So for example, one of the texts in this poem is, I see my death, yet I hasten my steps toward it.
نعم لكني أرى مصرحي ولكني أسرع إليه الخطى.
And here you see a picture of a child, so that were the child to think, this possibly is talking about adults. No, it's not. Here you see a dead child being carried aloft as a hero.
The PA received funds from the U.S. and European Union to send tens of thousands of Palestinian children to what was thought to be summer camps filled with friends, games, and swimming. In 2000, the New York Times exposed these summer camps as nothing short of paramilitary training camps.
Y también me gustaría saber que me explicara por qué Al-Fatah entrena a niños para que salgan con armas a la calle, poniendo en riesgo clarísimamente sus vidas. Gracias.
¿Estabas con ellos? Estabas tú con ellos. Dame una prueba de que tú, lo que dices es verdad, es cierto. Tú me preguntas una pregunta.
ومثل ما بقول مثل ما بقول انه جنرالات الجدد اطفالنا
سيدي الرئيس ما هي الرسالة التي تريد ان توصلها الى الشعب الفلسطيني بشكل عام والاطفال فلسطين بشكل خاص
بقول هذا الطفل اللي بيمسك الحجر قدام الدبابة مش اكبر رسالة للعالم وبيستشهد هذا البطل
كل مجموعة الانتحارية
فاحنا فخورين بهم
On the PA's television network, even the children's shows are laced with incitement. TV talk shows reflect and reinforce the attitudes of the Palestinian youth.
معنا ايضا اعزائي المشاهدين ولا الطويل ولا ايضا بالصف السادس 11 عام يا ولا
حكيت عن الشهاده كشيء جميل انت بتعتقد انه شيء جميل
الشهاده كثير شيء جميل جدا جدا كل الناس بتتمنى الشهاده لانه يعني ايش في احلى من انك تروحي على الجنة
ولكن اخذوا اليه الخطى
مين افضل السلام مع وجود حقوق كاملة للشعب الفلسطيني ولا الشهادة
الشهادة انا اخذ حقي بعدين استشهد لانه بدنا نعيش احنا حياتنا
Al-Najah University in Nablus hosted a unique exhibition, a celebration of the deadly suicide bombing attack on families dining at the Sbarro's restaurant in Jerusalem. Commitment to educate their nation towards peace. The PA did not comply with any of the major commitments signed at Oslo, and the terror continues. Oslo promised land for peace. The Palestinians received land, but the Israelis did not get peace.
Yasser Arafat, who was touted as this peacemaker and this great leader, never changed his stripes. He remains a terrorist. 1993 that it was in 1964 when he formed the Fatah.
In light of these failures, one might have expected that the Oslo dream would end and all negotiations with the Palestinian Authority would cease. But Israelis so desired peace that they elected Ehud Barak as prime minister in the hopes that he could accomplish the impossible. At Camp David and Taba in 2000, Barak offered greater concessions than any previous Israeli leader.
How long is it going to take, Mr. President?
How is it going, Mr. President?
We pledged to each other we would answer no questions and offer no comments. So I have to set a good example.
Here's what Israel offered. The creation of a Palestinian state, which would include control and ownership of up to 97% of the West Bank and 100% of the Gaza Strip. This would mean the removal and dismantling of most of the Jewish settlements in those areas. These included settlements built during the Oslo years. Jerusalem would become the shared capital of the new Palestinian state. The PA would control all of Arab East Jerusalem, which included 75% of the Old City and the entire Temple Mount. Israel also offered the return of an undisclosed amount of Palestinian refugees into Israel proper and financial compensation for those not included in the return. As the leaders stood on the verge of a breakthrough, the world realized that Barak was acquiescing to all of the original Palestinian demands. This despite the fact that the PA had not lived up to any of its trust-building Oslo agreements. But the laughter didn't last long. Arafat rejected the offer flat out and left the negotiations without so much as a single counteroffer. The PA then launched the Intifada, a war of terror that continues relentlessly into 2003. The Palestinians would have the world believe that the current armed struggle was sparked by Ariel Sharon's visit to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. But the PA Minister of Communications tells us otherwise.
هذه الانتفاضة يخطئ من يظن أنها حدثت بسبب زيارة الحقير شارون إلى المسجد الأقصى ولكن هذه الانتفاضة كانت معدة سابقا منذ عودة القائد الرئيس من مفاوضات كامب ديفيد الأخيرة عندما اختار الطاولة هناك في وجه الرئيس المنصرف كلينتون عندما وقف وتحداه ورفض الشروط الأمريكية في القلب الأمريكي.
Arafat rejected 95% of the land or more, 98% part of Jerusalem, and they rejected.
وبالتالي كان أبو الرئيس الرئيس الأول الذي يقول لأمريكا بالزمن الآن الواضح
Our people is continuing their road to Jerusalem, the capital of our independent Palestinian state. To accept or not to accept, let him go to hell.
So why did the PA reject the peace offers? What do they really want?
We have the same messages coming from political leaders. Same messages coming from religious leaders.
وقعت
والجليل ويافا.
Same messages being given to children in the school.
أبي فلسطين مش للصهاين.
أبي فلسطين مش للصهاين.
And it's a uniform message. Israel is temporary. Israel will be destroyed.
أعطونا السلاحات. أسلحة يعطونا. أعطوني سلاح ولا بس لحالهم بس. أعطوني كبسهم كلهم. ما نخليش ولا يهودي لحد. نخليش ولا يهودي هنا.
The reason Arafat doesn't want peace is because he doesn't want Israel.
In every map, in every school book, this is the way they present Palestine. All of Israel is erased. Israel doesn't exist. Israel doesn't exist. Israel doesn't exist. This is the Palestine that they teach their people to expect and to anticipate in the future.
What they want is the physical elimination of the Jewish people in the land of Israel.
There was an interview with Faisal Husseini where he said explicitly that the Oslo Accords are a Trojan horse to get inside Israel to continue the battle. He said no Palestinian can give up any part of Palestine from Metula to Eilat, and that the purpose of the Oslo Accords is ultimately to weaken Israel and destroy Israel.
Arafat's strategy was not a strategy of peace. He never committed himself to peace, to real peace. What he really wanted is to continue the armed struggle.
It happens very, very quickly. It explodes like an explosion of blood.
We're sick of our blood on the walls. We're sick of it.
دم نفديك يا شهيد. طيب انتوا ليش بتعملوا هيك مثلا؟
هيك.
عشان ايش؟
عشان تسويهم.
I think we're going to have to cut it at this point because at 10 o'clock they will, I guess, security is supposed to close down the building. But you saw just about the whole thing. So, okay, the lights are going on. That's very good. That's very good. And we suggest that you read this handout that you've been given sometime, maybe at home. You know, I grieve for every Palestinian child that is killed just as much as I grieve for every Israeli child that is killed. And I grieve that they had to be made the victims of their fiendish leaders and that they are exploited for the purposes of their leaders. And with this type of background, I think it becomes evident that peace is impossible. I think the Oslo peace process and Bush's roadmap to peace, which is a roadmap to disaster, will have one or two conclusions. One, it'll break down eventually into an Arab-Israel war, which I feel the scriptures show had to take place yet before the invasion of Gog. Or else there will be temporary peace. And then, as we have seen, the Palestinians will not be satisfied, so there will be this future war. And I think at that point, the Western powers will recognize the new boundaries of Israel, but they will say enough is enough, and they will superimpose a demilitarized zone in the Middle East, and that will lay the scene for the unwalled villages before the invasion of Gog and Magog. And it can't come too soon, because we know that God's kingdom and God's intervention is the only possibility of lasting peace in the Middle East. And some of the brethren keep asking, they say, well, will God actually permit Israel to give up land? Well, you know, many scriptures show that God is pleading with Israel, trying to develop their faith. And how do you develop faith? Does God just plop a lump of faith in your mind? No, we develop faith by trial, difficulty, learning our lessons. And if Israel does not have enough faith and they're willing to give back land or give up land, God will let them. That will be the process of developing their faith. And they'll have to take the land back and suffer much in the consequence. And that's how faith is developed. But there is going to be a glorious future. That's what we look forward to. We hope to, another vein, we hope to have a film, a video entitled, and it's going to be for a Christian audience, on Israel. Israel fulfilling Bible prophecy. God's peace plan for the Middle East. And we hope to have this video available this fall season for use of the brethren. And I'll just close by saying that I thank many of you for your concern about my whatever it is up here. And all I can say is you should see the other fellow. And the other fellow happens to be the black macadam or road when I hit when I tripped over a curb. I don't know who got the worst of it. But anyway, I appreciate your concern. And I appreciate your lingering and having an interest in Israel and rejoicing in God's plan for Israel. And rejoicing in our privilege of giving the Jewish people a message of comfort at this time. And God bless you all. Hope to see you on tomorrow. Get a good night's rest.